recording will be for the meeting of the Emory County School District Board of Education held on Wednesday, May 5th, 2010 at Emory High School, beginning at 7 p.m.
I think we'll go ahead and get started. We welcome you to our board meeting tonight. All of you, we have lots of special guests as well, and welcome to everyone. We will begin by having the Pledge of Allegiance to the please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have some special presentations to give tonight, and I'll let Mr. Singleton begin with this. We would like to have Dean come up, please, and stand up here.
Yes, come up here in front of the stand. Between Sam and I.
Between us, okay.
I'll let Sam's gonna look right in there for the picture and let Sam go ahead. Go ahead, Sam.
Oh. Well, it's certainly a pleasure to honor Dean tonight. I've known Dean since he was a little tiny boy. Taught school for many years with his dad. And it has certainly been a pleasure. There is no one more deserving of the Emory County School District Teacher of the Year Award than Emory County High School Dean Nelson. Dean teaches French and English at Emory High School and is just completing his 33rd year of teaching, 31 of those years in the Emory County School District. Coach Dean, as he is lovingly referred to, is a kind and humble person. His principal, Larry Davis, says, "Honestly, I can't remember him ever saying anything negative about another person. The only time I've ever seen him upset was when he was frustrated at himself for some frivolous oversight. His humility is refreshing in this era of self-aggrandizement. More than anything else, however, Coach Dean is a superstar teacher who cares about his students, their education, and Emory High School. You always know that with Coach Dean as a teacher, the students always get 100%. His students and colleagues respect him and acknowledge him long after they have left Emory High School, and how much he has meant to them. It's inspiring to see him work with troubled kids and how his soft-spoken approach can soften the most obstinate challenge. In addition, he is one of the most respected coaches in the state and has inspired many a young student athlete to compete with dignity and respect for the opponent. Even after his coaching days came to an end, he continues to support and inspire our teams and athletes. Despite some health issues coming into this school year, Coach Dean has been willing to take on the new challenge of teaching honors English classes. He has recognized his limitations with this assignment and has worked hard to learn the curriculum and find unique ways to inspire his students so that they may have a quality education. He is a team player, always willing to do what he can for kids. It's a pleasure for the Emory County School District Administration and Board of Education to honor this extraordinary gentleman teacher. His service to our school district and to the thousands of students he has touched is nothing short of outstanding. Congratulations, Coach Dean.
Thank you.
Now, having that said, let me tell you, even though I'm among superiors, I'm among friends. And I really do consider you a very, very special friend. And having said that, Sam, you might remember this. John, you might remember this. As a kid, I went to Peach Day with Sam one time. And they announced the Peach Day Queen. She was so excited, probably the only thing she'd ever won, so excited, the attendance. And 5 minutes later, there had been a mistake. The poor MC had to take care of that, and she was in tears, and she felt horrible. Superintendent, I guarantee you, if you want to recheck this thing. Listen, we have the best students around here, and faculty, administration. Larry's been a great support, Doug. Previous administrators, school board. I couldn't have done it. I can't say this in public. I couldn't have done it in a big city. I couldn't have been a teacher in a big city. There's no way.
I'll just leave it at that. I'd like to have Doug Johnson come up. This is a well-deserved award, Doug. Let me just tell you a little bit about Doug. He is the district technology specialist. He's been with the district for 15 and a half years. He is known throughout the district as the man who fixes the computers. That has great people skills and is easy to learn from. He is very knowledgeable about technology equipment and the software used by each piece of equipment. There are few, if any, technology-related problems he cannot fix. These are the comments from other district employees. So they've all turned in, of course, Doug. Not only does Doug solve a technology crisis every day, but he does it with a smile and a joke. Doug is always busy, but never so busy that he can't help a coworker with their computer problem. Doug's knowledge of computers is vast and ever-evolving to keep up with the changing technology. In all the years Doug has worked for the district, he has never complained or shirked his duties. Doug is always smiling and is there to pitch in whenever needed for any purpose. He will pop in every so often and ask, "What can I do for you?" Everything I know and do with computers is because of Doug and his ability to teach. I'm sure this is true of many Emory District employees. Since part of Doug's assignment includes the Green River schools, he is on the road a lot. However, he never complains and has always expressed his concern for helping the administration, faculty, and staff at Green River High School and Brookcliff Elementary. He has also been a great delivery service each week as he makes his trek to Green River, and his deliveries are especially appreciated around payday time. Doug has a high, just keep on going down that freeway. Doug has a high level of energy, especially around hunting seasons. I knew that had to be in there. I knew it. But it is certainly not uncommon for Doug to work as many hours as needed to finish the project, especially the months before school starts when switching out the old computers and installing the new ones. Doug is a skilled employee and a friend to all. It is a pleasure for Emory School District Administration and Board of Education to present this award to Doug Johnson. We just want to say congratulations, Doug.
Well,
Pretty good teacher because he was my teacher, and I ended up here instead of somewhere else. And the only other thing I guess is this must have been a computer vote, and it was down that basis. So I appreciate it. It's nice to be acknowledged and for the notes that somebody knows what you do. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
it's so nice to have so many great employees in our district. We appreciate you so much. And you are more than welcome to stay, but as a treat to you, as an extra, we will well excuse you if you want to go. So we will leave it at that. Okay, let's go to the EduCast project.
I've been trying to have at least one project we're working on in this board meeting the last little while. I've been coming in and talk to you just briefly about things that are going on in the school district. A lot of those projects involve John, so I've had him. Last time when we had preschool, we have a special project going on right now that I think is really critical to the school district. It will have huge impact on student learning, and John is going to have some help and talk for just a few minutes about that project that they've been working on now for a few months. So, John,
we could have the board members kind of rotate around. It's a little bit light out there still, so those in the audience, you want the lights on?
Would it help?
I don't know.
Let's try.
Answer. If not, we'll just kind of.
Can you see okay?
Over it.
Okay.
Weekly doing writing assessments using my access another wonderful one that helps us with our lighting skills. So all of those are formative assessments. And if you didn't do the formative assessment, you wouldn't really have a feel for how the students are going to do at the end of the year. So they're all really good for that purpose. As mentioned before, these assessments inform the students, the parents, and the educators about student performance and remediation needs. Professional development is essential to provide school statistics, the tools, and expertise needed to improve the development and implementation of standardized assessments. Recommendations for improving and increasing the quality of the use of these instruments include the following. First of all, developing the test, administering and scoring the test, using the results to inform the parents and the educators, and identify interventions. So a bit about what we've been at this year. Like I said before, for the last 6 years we've used this particular instrument, and we've relied on the larger districts who created core-like assessments from Salt Lake and Granite. And as time went on and they adapted or adopted, I should say, new revised core curriculums in language arts and math, our tests became long in the tooth and they were out of alignment. And so this year we had our friends from Mississippi.
Somewhere
in the south. Either that or Wayne County, I'm not sure. Come in and provide us with a couple of days of very intense training and orientation. I have four teachers that were involved in the project. Lori Latham here to present a piece of the five. Surveying, Mrs. Wallen, Chris Wallen, and Stephanie Roper. Those that were involved in the math endorsement program as well as our literacy coaches. So they were really good experts in the process. And so they helped, in fact, fine-tune and create an Emory version of core curriculum tests that were more aligned with the current assessments that are in place today. So that was a refresher, if you will, because we were a little bit out of alignment. You know, those tests were 6-7 years old. And they revise that core, then they get out of alignment and they don't simply match what they should. So that's what we were about this year, and we worked hard and produced our own, and Lori's going to show you a little bit of that later on. But more importantly is the use of the data. And so for the next 4 minutes, you're going to see an elementary school that's been at it for, like I say, that many years in what I call a quarterly data analysis meeting. You've heard a principal talk about it. It was started back when I introduced Dibble as a Title I Assessing Director. Mrs. Hudson and I, Lynn Johnson, weren't quite sure how we would deliver the results to the teachers, and we thought, well, we need to have regularly established meetings. And so we started this process of meeting with the teachers during the day, giving them that opportunity to sit down and staff the program, kids, and all of the teachers, and then make changes if necessary. If you don't do that, then look at the data, it doesn't do anything. So you're going to see a group of people around the table, kindergarten, and I happen to be in the building, had my video camera, and I thought, this will be a great time because we're going to do this presentation. So I just went in here, it is unheard, and there wasn't anybody's volume. Mm-hmm. Sit down here.
I'm Teacher Title I coordinator, resource teacher coordinator, the staff that are assigned to be with that particular teacher, these are the two kindergarten teachers, extended kindergarten, regular kindergarten. The teaching assistants are assigned to those folks, and they all participated in the process. It's institutionalized. They have it four times a year. They know what's coming. They're expected to bring the data. If there are problems, they have to have suggestions on how to fix it. So all of those things are really important if you're going to make it work. Otherwise, it's business as usual. Here's the instructions if you don't get it fast. It was the kindergarten teacher's fault, right? They didn't do their job when they were supposed to.
No.
So it's a really healthy way to handle things. Typically, it's about a day and a half. We have a rotating job, 45 minutes about for each of the, sessions. And it's a work in progress. I know Cottonwood is implementing this kind of thing, similar to Huntington, where they use the whiteboard and they track the kids on the whiteboard. There are variations on the thing. And it depends on the amount of resources in the building. Do you have Title I teachers? Do you have all of those things help to make that a better problem? It's certainly the way it ought to be done if it's going to use data and change and have one instruction. So, questions about that? I'm quick.
Yeah, what? How many schools are doing
this? Well, I know that in Huntington and Sarum, because those are the two Title I programs that we started it in, and I've tried to model that for some of the other schools. I know, I think Cottonwood has attempted that to a degree this year. A lot of it depends on whether they have enough resources available in the school to do that.
Cleveland isn't even aware of how hiring subs out of land trust money to pull the teachers together to go through the data, and the other schools are doing the same thing. The Title I schools do have a big advantage here because of the resources they have. But the key is the fact that we have a lot of data that is available now to those who work with these children, in particular the teachers. And now the challenge is to provide the time for these teams to get together and look at the data and then plan the strategies that need to be in place to improve instruction. And most of our schools have some form of this. Title I schools have a little bit of advantage because of the resources that they have. But all of our elementary schools have some form of this kind of process going on with the data. So.
I have another question. How does it impact teachers who are maybe not, how do you resource them or help them, give them help in teaching if their class is not.
Well, that's part of the challenge they had in these meetings. A couple of years ago, we had a grade that the existing materials were too high for them. So we had to go out and research some alternate supplemental materials. So it became a task for that group to go out and figure out what they were going to do to help close that gap. So it's a team effort. It's not totally just that one individual. And then we look outside for help from others.
And we also look at the data not only by school but district wide, and then as part of our consolidated application of consolidated plan, we plan staff development based on what the data says about the kids and whether they need more help. So we work with teachers in those areas too.
So basically, collaboration not only is set up to aid the students, but the teachers as well.
Oh, absolutely.
All the staff.
Yeah, if we have something that's not working, then we need to find something that will help make it work. So it's both from an instructional standpoint and curriculum standpoint. I think our teachers are getting a lot better at contacting other schools and grade levels and asking questions of how they do things, getting ideas from each other. I know Lori, she sends emails probably at least weekly, and the third grade sends letters and emails to each other with suggestions of how to do things, questions that they may have. First grade does that. They're getting a lot better, I think, in using emails and their expertise in dealing with each other. I think it's a positive thing.
And Jed also has grade level meetings going on. Is it monthly or quarterly?
Quarterly.
Quarterly. For the teachers think around the grade levels are getting together and sharing ideas and looking and also talking about the common data. So we're getting better and better at it, I think.
I think this would be invaluable to a new teacher, and we're getting a new teacher. I think that would be a very, very helpful thing for other teachers to give ideas and
sometimes your teachers bring in good stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
I think just the fact that they're talking about individual students gets everybody on board to collaborate to help that individual student. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's fantastic.
It is. But again, there's a lot of keys to it, but we have more data available than we've ever had in history. You absolutely have it drilled right down to the individual student, the concepts, and you're able then to talk about exactly where the problem is and ideas on how to resolve it.
Well,
it's no longer guesswork.
If you meet quarterly, it gives you a chance to evaluate and say, is our plan working, or do we need to revise it?
And celebrate
some accountability. And I think when we got presented this in a national conference, so it's something that's
been around a long time.
It
wasn't easy, and it isn't there yet. It hasn't arrived, and never will. It's work in progress. Appreciate the comments. A piece of the Plato Edge Test software We have the benchmark part, which I'm responsible to make sure that everyone does. There's a piece that the teachers are involved in, and we're going to have Lori come up, and I'll drive, and you
tell me where you're going. That's true, they don't have that. If I can get my mind clear now and think up, what I need is to talk to this kid out. I didn't hear because John couldn't get anybody else up into this. So, one of the things that we were talking about a minute ago, this kindergarten teacher's fault. Now I've learned that it's the best teacher's fault, not all this stuff. As John said, we got together and we analyzed questions, we figured out what things we needed to do to make some tests that align with our course. We had two of us working on language arts and two on math, and there was quite a chore to make sure things matched up. I have a great appreciation for Kirk Scott in the state office now. I will never speak to her about a test again. We didn't have things ready to go at the beginning of the year. We started our test creating in the middle of the year and didn't really have them set in stone yet. And when we finished one test, we decided we were going to test drive it. And then we quickly loaded on a second one for my students to see what it looked like. And, the reports that we get from these are fantastic. No more do you have to hand test reports, which is wonderful. And it can give us more than a teacher would ever have time to analyze by themselves. When I think back at hand testing and checking, or scan comms that we used to feed in and get limited amount of information, these are just fantastic. We give the test, we will be giving the test in probably around November and then in April. We heard that this is what, March and April, just so that we could have some data to show you. So it's kind of interesting. It was good for me to see what questions we need to change, where we need to fix some of these. Our curriculum has standards and objectives and indicators for every grade level. And the one that we're going to look at today is on math. And we did the 2 seconds. John, go ahead and go to second project. When we first do the test, we would only have the 1 session, and then by the time we get the 2nd session, you can see if we've improved or where we've gone down. But let me tell you that the 2nd set of tests is completely different than the 1st test. It still has the same standards and objectives, but the questions will be completely different. So even though they may get better or worse, we have to then look at the questions and see. Because when they take a mid-year test, they of course haven't had a lot of the stuff that we would teach after that. And so we're testing them on one thing, make more at the beginning of the year, and maybe not as much, and although we try to review and make sure that they know it all, it's still kind of hard. But here we have a list of our standards and objectives that for the 3rd grade that shows what there were questions were on, because we're only. Oh, okay. Let's go through. Let's see. Look at going to section 1. Just go down. That is what we got on custom coverage report at the bottom?
Uh-huh.
Yes, that
one.
That's where you were. Okay, go to item response. Or maybe we got the wrong. No, I wanted to two together. That's okay. Go to that one. That's fine. This shows by objective which ones the students of the whole class have mastered and near mastery. And this would correlate with our state course X, with their partial mastery, their 1, 2, 3, and 4. Of course, we'd all like everybody to be at mastery, but from this one, we can see in this subheading, it's overall updates. And there's some areas that we need to work on, like measurements, which in the middle of the year they wouldn't have had very much on measurements. So we look on through that. This breaks it down by those are students and their individual scores. So we can see by each student which one has partial mastery and near mastery. or bastard. And
really,
that
really is funny names too.
They really are, because I didn't want anybody to say those are names. So we created, this is actually my class, and I do know who those names are. I should tell you in a minute. Keep on scrolling down. This takes the standard and so you buy the standard where you fits in. So I can see which food still needs to work on post value. Which ones kind of have it under their belt for this session. Next week might be different. And it goes through every standard and shows us where those students are at that time. Notice that there's only two or three groups of sports. There's only two to three questions on each standard. So there's not much variation there. So as a true test, it's a very good test for me to know, but it doesn't give me information exactly on each standard. I know if they know it. I wouldn't use it as a test for each standard to see, do they really understand like the end of a chapter test? This is totally the end of your test. Standard two then, this is the same thing. Only we can, I would now sit down and see, did we move things from near mastery over to mastery? Are there things that stopped down that we need to review more? And then you have to say what the students. You see more. Now, my students did not do as well on the second session, I must admit. I split their staff, but that's okay because we hadn't reviewed and I hadn't used it as a review for me. I just said, let's go take this test. Which shows all of us that we need to make sure our kids are prepared for that. We did it quickly, and they had already had a similar test, and they were thinking, ah, this is just another of the same old thing. And kids actually do that, so we need to really prepare them for the first test. You want to go back and we'll, yeah, see, that doesn't go down to, yeah, I want to show a student. So, administrative assistant. Well, yeah, we could. Down to the next one, and that one again. And if you go down to the bottom, students there. Here I have the students and their side-by-side scores.
This is wonderful.
I would never been able to get that just by myself. Now, if you go pick one up and it's up to you.
Which one do you want?
Somebody who went up.
Right
there? Yeah, that one.
You.
Okay, there we have side-by-side, concept, by standard and objective. And I can see if you dropped, if you stayed the same, if you went down, whatever. And then if you go down to do this, and it tells me where he may need problems, have problems. And as a teacher, I use that to help me know, well, if we go on to this one, and the check marks means they got it right. And when you get a red X, you can actually click on that and go right to this question. So if you click right on it, it will take you right to that question and show me. And I look at this, I go over every question. And this one, I know for a fact that what he did was made a mistake in his subtraction.
This has to be the most important part.
This is the most important part.
Sometimes the description doesn't say anything.
It doesn't.
And I sat down with a student on a self-expression
and went through the questions that they missed and found out that most of them is just a simple reading problem.
Right.
They did it at the time. Maybe it said choose the, well, I know on this one, but choose the least probable. They always ask to choose the most probable answer. Mm-hmm. And so they have to learn that you have to use it correctly. And I learn easily through here exactly where I can help those students. You're not teaching the test, you're teaching technical skills that they need to know. They will never sit down. If they use the scores, they'll go on. But to sit down with the teacher and be able to go through their scores helps them, and it helps me know that they understand what. I sat down with each student and they could tell me almost immediately, oh, but I did that wrong. Oh, I should have added another zero. They know what this is.
So, Lori, when do you access the students individually to do this?
Well, my students go to our computer lab once a day for 45 minutes. I'll go run aside with me and talk with them. Because we're not one of those lucky Title I schools. So I'll either use time, computer time. And I do have a day that will come in for 45 minutes at the end of that time. But this is very helpful. And now as a test creator, I will look at all of the questions and see if there's a certain question that was way into the left, then we'll go in and see why. Maybe it was worded wrong, maybe the questions were in the wrong order, and see exactly where we sit there. This is invaluable to us as teachers. We could never get this information on our own.
Thank you. Okay. I think I've taken up enough time for tonight. Thank you.
I love the girl to death, and I'm going to cry about it. It's just graduation. I've already cried over and have a million years. She was running for state office. She was unsuccessful, but she had a great opportunity and learned how to get out and be able to do what I'm doing tonight. And that was why I wanted to say, I wanted to, for those of you that know her, when she came in and talked more, she was now. She was quiet, pretty hot, people couldn't get up in front of her. By the time she was done with the whole process with this question from about, she was up in front of 400 to 800 people, talking and presenting, and then going down into judges that were junior high to high school level age kids that had run for this non-com opportunity to elect a new officer. She really changed around, so go ahead. The question, why is that program degree made a part of the school curriculum? This was the question. It came about from the testing and from the non-com as they sit down with advisors and everything of something that we really want these state officers, if they're going to be a state officer, we want to have them be able to come to you, come to professionals, come to businessmen, and be able to explain why this is such an important question and why it should be here. When we got back to the hotel on Thursday night down to Peterson, Andrea goes, I know I have a really hard question. I said, oh, nothing's ever too hard. We can handle anything we've got. You can't have electronics. We were allowed 8x8.5x11 and a marker. And this is what, oh, and duct tape. I don't know duct tape. She's my duct tape girl. So anyway, those were the three things we had to do an entire presentation on this question for. So we converted it. This from the paper and duct tape. I just had to keep it. Experts, volunteers, and especially this is something. It's dear to you guys, so we're going to talk it through. Go ahead. Okay, everyone needs to know more about ads. As we were going through this presentation, it was between 10:30 and 1 o'clock in the morning. I ended up having a chapter meeting with my chaperones and my students right there in my hotel room. Carried for everybody was fast. Everybody was stopped by before curfew. And the kids started giving input to her just for the presentation. And this is the first one that came about. Everywhere you go and everything you see has some part of the background with agriculture. From the clothes you wear to the papers you write on, it is possible you can bag. Some people don't know what the word agriculture means. I think this is very, again, this is her presentation, and I left it exactly as we had it. This is very important in both French and French. Everyone needs to have a knowledge of what ag is. Even if it is a small meaning, it is knowledge. Don't you want to know where your food comes from? How it got from source? I know I do. And I had to agree with her. And this was one of the important stepping stones that was part of the presentation. Okay. McDonald's rely on agriculture. All right. Thursday night, hotel room, high school kids. McDonald's bag is on the table. And right on the side of the McDonald's bag was a label that talked about where they got their hamburger, where they got their toppings, their potatoes, or their french fries. And we have that whole thing. And it was like, she grabbed it, she cut it out, and she put it right there in her script. And I was like, label, I mean, when you modern day to help you. I worked on the side of McDonald's bags in very, very clean condition. They talked about where McDonald's got their meat, their produce. They got their meat and their produce from nothing other than farms. They have farmers. This may not seem way dangerous, and it may seem like this has nothing to do with education. But even McDonald's rely on agriculture. So we need to teach students to rely on it. Not because McDonald's, but because agriculture supplies the one we're clothing to and many, many other products. When all else fails, we still have agriculture. With everything that's going on in the economy, we've been talking about a lot of different things, what could possibly happen, how things are impacted, and some of the currency ones like that. So when factories fail, industry fail, and everything else, especially though, we still have agriculture. Agriculture is one of the biggest industries in the world. It supplies the world with many products. Unless something drastically happens, and all the farms in the world are destroyed. Agriculture is not going anywhere. We can always depend upon agriculture. That's why it is also very important to teach students about it. Agriculture is life. Okay, before I have you roll this next one. This is kind of our basis. When we're doing ag science, we're doing natural resources, we're doing animal science in classes, we always come back to, all right, we're talking about this, but how can I bring it to your daily life? How can it impact you? And so it's a continuing theme in everything that we do in my environment. You learn different school subjects by farming. You start with the farm, you learn about equipment, crops, water. So school around the farm, we have sciences and math. We spent several units talking about conversion ratios and actually spending a lot of time, and they were actually sick of it, and ready to move on and saying, let's go back to math with Mr. White or somebody. Because it wasn't as tough, the concept of being able to convert from a hectare to an acre and just simple things like that was past their first initial capabilities. And so it worked around. School, math, English, art, and history. You can learn many different school subjects by farming. In farming, you need math, biology, English, and history, and in some cases, art. So by teaching this in the classroom in school, you are learning math, proper English communication, and writing skills. History and art, I teach from experience. We need history, we even need art to be able to communicate ideas, thoughts, processes, technology. That even in mechanizing a tractor, when you go out and you buy a part, if you go to the right place on their website, on the manuals, they're going to have a schematic to build up, and they're going to say, all right, you want this part, this part, this part, and then so you come down here, and here's another section on part numbers and everything else. So art is not just left with Mr. Royal for us. I try to have them learn from that, okay? What happens if we lose the generation of ag? If we lose the generation of ag, and if it gets taken out of our schools, businesses, industries, and factories, we'll fail. By teaching agriculture in schools, we're teaching future industry farmers, future agricultural businesses, and just future ag industry workers. If these students don't have the knowledge of high school ag classes, college ag classes will be at least 10 times harder than it could be. Because you learn the basics sophomore year, and each year up to your senior year, you learn more in your knowledge and increases the college so you can be successful. Okay, I'll be done with you. So in her demonstration, she had a foundation to do as she was doing the presentation. She drew a home and everything, and at the bottom of her way out here, you see agriculture and farming. And that was part of the presentation, if any, but since the beginning of time, agriculture has been a big part of human civilization. Ag is part of life's medicine, a product, and of course, your food. Instead of counting all that ag, there's a part of in one, okay. In one slide, the next slide shows what products come from where it enjoys. I won't spend a lot of time here. She pulled this up from Utah Island Classroom. It's one of our sites that we use with DFSA. And we said where their products come from. One of the best ones that I always get a lot of people with, especially my little third graders, is Jell-O. You don't get third graders to raise their hands for the words that they like the most, which means a Jell-O product and liking Jell-O. It's usually something that they don't. But Jell-O is just put it on here.
The alphabet board is probably the next
one. I don't think to use it. Anyway, Jell-O actually comes right in here. They literally pull out not the blood, but they pull out portions of the blood system to make Jell-O. It is a byproduct. Jell-O is a byproduct in food, and that's one I always want because it's so easy and it's such an explanation. Mother is a common one. Hammered is a common one. You want them to get that thought. And so this is something that they actually use to eat. So when I come around to her presentation and she's thrown it in there, I was quite impressed 2 years ago. I know we don't like this in the storage station system, but there. And we got to a hotel once, and there was some beer left in the fridge. The housekeeping hadn't gotten rid of it, and I was like, if I just keep my little hotel room, I'm going to be in trouble. I don't want them left with it. We can't just throw it in the garbage. We might, somebody might go scavenge it. But I said, learning lesson here, and put it on the lawn. And I went, what does that do? And I said, there are components that are actually healthy for plants. And they were like, oh. And I'm like, it's a byproduct of farming and all that. And so we actually taught this. I don't teach that one, but just the recital, that is something that I've read in the world. And it's really cool, because it's always interesting to just have people find out. Go ahead. All right, education leads to knowledge. Knowledge leads to operations. Without the ag ed program, we cannot have agriculture knowledge, and without agriculture knowledge, we cannot have agricultural operations. So our biggest point is that it's a foundational system that we need to build on, and it's a continuing process. Okay. Ag industry then. Ag is one of the top biggest industries in the world. Even sometimes people that don't realize it because they don't work on a farm, they don't live on a farm, they've never been to a farm. They can still be a part of the ag industry because they work in pharmaceutical companies, they work in business, accounting, things like that. So I try to teach them, but if you don't want to be in your 30s, there's still other opportunities out there and high paying jobs available. Anything we do and everywhere we go has a part of agriculture in it. Without the ag industry, we all be hungry, even worse than it. Agriculture literally feeds men and gold and all too. With this, I feel it is very important to teach students and other people that. Many people don't know where their clothes or food comes from. It is important that we all know, but it means in school programs, everyone can know. And then I believe it to close with the FSA model, which is learning to do. Then we participate by doing to learn, we earn to live. We don't, I think that this is the economic portion of, we're not out there to be welfare assistance. You're out there to work the hardest, to do your best, so that you aren't reliant upon someone else, that you are self-reliant and can do anything you want if you try. And the last one is living to serve. Community service is our key component that I have really pushed hard at this year. We just received an award in that this past weekend up in Hoover City. We had the top school as far as some of the service projects in that that we're doing. One of the top programs, and I actually have sent Mr. Davis for this to give this idea. But I've got kids that are ready when we start the actual community work to be a part of the Green School. They didn't want to be a part of Green School. They didn't want to recognize it because they didn't want to be considered environmental. Through Ben Hoffman and Forest Service and a few other organizations that I've had come in this year and go out in the field and work with outside on the canal, with the canal company and like that, we've taught them that it's not environmentalism, it's conservation and environmentalism. We've had to preserve, and we can do this down the road, not just preserve and continue. We learn if we can do things to be successful. We do things we can learn things more fully. We earn the money or the jobs so we can live in a successful life. We learn to serve others so we can make a positive influence on others. Add in the school curriculum to teach us these things. And then to close us with add education. Education through career leadership, personal growth, and career success, which is our educating national children. And then it teaches students how to be leaders, how to lead. It grows them in some ways, some programs not. the council has been with the future career to not report it. That's my presentation. It was supposed to be for Andrea and I. Oh, any questions? Thank you, sir.
Very nice.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
We want to jump in and see what the word is.
Thank you again. We have the consent agenda, the warrants, the minutes for the April 2010 meeting, and financial reports for March 2010. Are there any questions on those?
I move that we accept them as they've been presented to us.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approval of comprehensive guidance program.
The very first standard that we not only get school board approval, but we get your continued support with that. And I appreciate your support in everything we do. Now, quickly, I just want to go through. Besides the annual thing, every 6 years, we have to have a complete program review. And that is done when an outside district comes in. Usually, it can be have a state personnel. Private district come over and went through our. They go through an evidence portfolio we have provided what we are doing in each of the 12 standards. I know what Lucy will tell you a little bit more about that because this is her baby. She put this together, she organized it for the last 6 years. We found the data, she put it together, and as you can see, this is very impressive. So this is our evidence. She's going to show you. We also had to do what we present through the state, and I kind of want her to go through that with you just briefly, so she can tell you what she accomplished. I want her to know. She knows, but I want you to know how very much I appreciate her and what a great job she did.
So I'll just kind of show you first on here. This is the part the state wants. Of course, it's the signature. So this is Green River's also, and some funding counselor from Green River. You get both. We're actually going to talk about all of this. But you can see on here, both of them have been signed by all of us. We did pass with a 3, which is actually a pretty good rating overall.
It means that it's rated on a 0 to 4, so there's actually 5. But as long as you pass with mostly 3s, then you're good. So Green River did have one area which we were lower on. Mostly that was used to pass situation, but I can't take, I don't take total responsibility for that, but I did not prove that there were certain things happening with community council and the advisory committee using that as an advisory committee. And so that's where our 3 came from Green River. But everything else there and then at Emory High were 3, so we did pass. One thing that they give us our strengths and our recommendations on every one of the standards. So, just a few of our strengths from Emory High, Spaces and Technology Equipped Counseling Center, Up and Running Counseling Website, those things everybody has worked on to make them as they are so good for us and able to have the website for the student has been wonderful to be able to say, well, here's more information. So, and because they are more likely to look at websites sometimes, I'm going to do that. Then,
can remember all that I was going to pronounce. Oh, the, we had another one with, what was that?
Yeah, that was the one we were going to do. And then he helps facilitate the request that they're able to also have. The overall recommendations were to focus more time on direct services for students, and that's starting for 80% of your time actually with the students. Some of our time is spent on other things that aren't considered by the state working with students. So we didn't get, we were just barely off of the 80%. And then fund additional STE for counseling position and or align counselor responsibilities according to strengths and non-traditional. And that was just basically that position which they saw as a conflicting role between vice principal and so that was the overall recommendation for our school. Overall, I think it was a successful review in both areas. I learned a lot about both of the programs. And we'll be learning a lot about Pennsylvania County leadership.
Because they are
what?
Up for review.
Because they are up for review. And I will be helping Ryan.
Okay.
I do need to tell you one other thing that they do require that they like to talk about are SELP numbers. So, just of what I have on here that of our 10th graders, we had 137 students. That was 100%, 132 parents came with a 96% return. 11th graders, there were 170 students, 100% of students, and then 108 parents came with 77% return. As the 12th graders, 160 students, which was 100%, and then 152 parents, which was 95% of parents came. Now, if you ask other districts, if we even mentioned how many parents come, they would be flabbergasted. Do we just have such good response from our parents from showing up to our SELP? And we are just so happy that they do show up. So it's been great. Also, a lot of our parents, our teachers help with those too. So it's not just that we're seeing them, but teachers are seeing those parents also. In Green River, the numbers were not so good for last year. I won't go over them specifically, but there were some low ones, 7th graders, only 43% of the students were seen for SELP. This year, I can tell you already, we're at 100% of the students, and not that many parents, I'm not sure of the number of parents, but we do have quite a few parents that have come. We're probably up in 80% of parents for all students as well. Sanifel and Tanyu, they again, 7th graders had 100% of students, 8th graders had 96% of students, 9th graders had 100% of students, and then their parental involvement was 95% for 7th graders, 84% for 8th graders, and 56% for 9th graders. And then Tanyu had 100% for 7th graders students, 96% of 8th grade students, and 98% of 9th grade students, 95% of parents came from 7th graders. SELP, 84% came for the 8th grade SELP, and 88% came for the 9th grade SELP. So really, overall, as a district, we're doing quite well on our SELP. Anyone have any questions?
So what's the direct service
to decide SELP? Any examples? Direct services fall under the last So they would be responsive services, school guidance curriculum, so actually working either in groups or in classroom with students. Responsive services are going to be one-on-one time, the student comes in and needs to talk, or referring to outside agencies, or
document is something that doesn't fall under program or guidance curriculum. And then CRIT, Learning Development, and SEOP are the other two that fall under the
curriculum.
How do you track those? Put a little markdown on the block? Well, each counselor has to go through, and then you have a paper that you 6 days throughout the year that you mark down what you did at every half an hour interview. Is it 10 days that you mark throughout the year, and they're just random days. You just pick them since everyone is a year or a good day and mark them down, and then you just compile that information, and I put it into a computer system, and it's
One of the things teachers have been concerned about is, other things that have been required, that there's not been enough correct relation for the kids for us to get in and do that correct relation. That's why we try to do something for each grade level. For 10th grade, we do the flag test, which is the pre-ACT test. The reason we like that is it gives me an opportunity. I go in, we do the opening presentation, tell them why we're going to do this. Then we do the test, and then go back into the individual English classrooms and do the interpretation. And in that plan, it gives them, they do an interest inventory, they do what matches their careers. There's several areas you can go through and help that student see, well, based on what you put on here and what where you are academically, these are good and suggested. Or if you still want to go in that area, what do I need to do? What other classes should I take in school? Help them plan what classes to take as far as the next year. And then we build on that, and then when we do the ASVAB, which is the military one, but it's the best career exploration there is, and doing it for free because the military pays for it. So that's why we do it. But when I go and coach students, again, go on.
I was going to bribe you. She gives the best gift my girl can coach. Yeah, that's the whole lesson.
Yes.
Tell them to give the importance of getting hurt by that.
So it's a good follow up. So we do it as a sophomore, then we go in as the juniors, and so again, I go in preliminary, we go into English classes, and they're about for it, try to, and I have to take it seriously, and then when we do get results back, go back in the classes, do the interpretation, and again, have a match it. Well, is that different from your plan? And then you keep building on that. And then with the 12th graders, we try to do even more career exploration and get those in there. And now with the new Eco Futures program, hopefully that's going to steer it so that we can spend more time. And that's where the competition guidance, and that's part of that direct service, even though it's in groups. But they want us to be in direct contact with the student, not just doing the paperwork or reports or in our office. They want us to learn with the
kids. Thank you.
And Carbon did say, they said, oh, I'm sure you guys have more than 80%. I was like, I just went off of what our students told us, so.
It will be.
But that's okay, we got a 3 in the MS.
I didn't count the time I spent with
discipline
issues.
105%. Thank you for that. Appreciate that information.
Is there a motion required to approve?
Yeah, do we need to make a motion to approve that?
To approve the comprehensive guidance program.
For all the schools that you were, okay.
I move that we approve it for all schools.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks for all you do. It has an impact on kids in their future. We appreciate what you do. Thanks. FFA, approval of land use for ag ed livestock area.
Okay, we have my proposal in rationale. What I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to get an opportunity to be able to take students out and put a more hands-on in their yard. I have a nice up-to-date current classroom, and I have a lot of facilities to fight there. But practicing in the guest room on an orange for 10 years is really, really out. I am wanting to be able to bring field professionals in and have the kids, you know, on an old cow that we can control, we can crack down on her, that somebody's getting ready just to send it off to go to it or kill them and, you know, pour them out if we've got sort of conditioning or whatever. And give these kids true application of being able to do the things that we're going to be expected of out in the real world when they start doing it. My proposal then was that the equipment that I bought a couple of years ago to, it was through a not regular district funding, it was through federal money. But we got it, and I was allowed to be able to get the best equipment. It's sitting over there, it's not in any shape, which is really hard because I'm using really low quality in my own place. And every time I get a kid's finger or a stick or something at home, I'm thinking, I have a really nice pet over there, but I can't use them. But what we'd like to do is be able to do it now and still down so that I'm not using the chance of getting a student hurt and not being able to pull down, but still getting that application would be a really vital driving force of some of the curriculum and stuff. Being able, like right now, we're doing a food unit, we're doing nutrition, I'm talking about food, we're talking about the different kinds of foods that you have. If I could do a palatability test, bring a horse in for a couple days, or a day, and show them, all right, here's some lactose, here's a protein block, here's alfalfa pellets, alfalfa hay, and food, and how quick, and do some different, you know, theories, and even how to do research on animals, like we're doing in the university level. That would be something we could do here, but right now, unless I bring the horses standing out here on the asphalt around the cement, as I've done actually in the past for some of my safety units and that, it doesn't really work, and I would like to be able to do this balance of the ground. Any questions?
Is there any liability issues?
Yeah.
It's fairly bad if we do it on school ground. It probably is if we do it off.
But well, you probably have the same liability no matter where you're at, as long as it's in your pursuit program.
Okay. I think the students put these stores. Because we originally was looking at ground over here at college, and they started building homes there, and I was worried about when we originally did it, it was the little section lot that isn't good enough to have a home. And the school went ahead and had them start doing some things there, and was going to put the machines there, and stuff like that, and food stamps. But it's really hard to get the homes that are coming in. And I'm worried about neighborhood kids coming in and spilling my stuff and I'm trying to come after us or anything. So we went ahead and just put them over in Flint, I think, in one of the courts. We put them over here. And we've got lots of developing things. That's kind of my Arbor Day lab, as I call it. We've got fruit trees planted there. I'm starting to do other little things. So it eventually become a place for the community and that. And that small community section. For the family
this is not intended for, these are one day, basically one day projects.
Right.
Where you come in, it's not for animal storage, that's not the right word, but to corral them and keep them and
right.
Raise them. And
other schools do that, but when I talk other schools, we're talking Davis, we're talking Stanford, we're talking Princeton, Springville, Pleasant Grove. The school grounds become source areas that we stick because they don't have any wild ones to be able to do this. We don't have that problem here.
So this would be bringing animals in for the day, going through these kinds of activities, the instruction, and then basically those animals then would be taken home
right.
Or removed from the property.
Good animals are these?
I've got, as it says on number 5 on the map now, we were donated two years ago at the stock show, and donated a UM. One of their things to help their students become more animal conscious and get more projects out there for the kids was to donate a youth hack fund youth program. Nobody around here that didn't already have youth wanted a youth. And so I was stuck with this youth, and I'm a youth and horse person, and it was kind of a
Well, kids
that
with
eyes and told the youth are a bad thing.
Yes, they are. And I was talking about it. It's been kind of a, yeah. I was a big thing for me because I'm like, I can't stand sheep. I'm not a sheep lover. I've had to learn to respect them. And if you ever see they have really come around. It's become a community project in Emory because half the town is sick. No one, my kids are walking with me. I went out there and I got their little collars and we're walking down the road and everybody's looking at us like, what are you doing? We're walking in like a dog. But it's become a really good process and I've actually helped, I'd say probably 5 families now. Start projects for their kids, not high school level, but I'm getting them at the elementary level. They're having them at my house over there and we're actually getting teaching kids how to share them, how to feed them, how to perform and how to sell. And then giving them the cool part of this project is the bath rams are donated to the kids. They don't have to pay for them. When they get a new ram, they have to give it to the guy that is having the seat for me now so that my horse doesn't have a foot on it. But it helps him increase his herd. And it helps me to be able to put money out to these elementary kids, which is who's doing that right now. They're able to raise these rams, sell them at the soft of life. They get money for school, for whatever, college, missions, some of them. And then they take $100 out of their $300-$400 check, and then give that back to their kids. So this is how I'm still keeping it back to the extended. And this will be our first year finally, to be friends that rams with her. This year, and we will actually put money back into the chapter, that I don't have to try and go out and get out of the system. So, it's going to be a continual process, it's a building process, but some of these things, like how to share, they don't realize how you're going to hold them, they don't realize how to run the clippers or any of that, and if I can do it here, then they can take the clippers from the door on their own, we'd be a lot better off.
Have we had any long-term plans for that property out there?
The only thing I know of is the storm area.
No, tell me exactly where it's just south of the electronics building?
It's west of the tennis court.
West and south.
Okay, that's
so
south,
yeah, same area. South of that new building that we can find. There's going down
there. Is that going to make a problem for you, kids?
I
support Corinne on this. I think it's an excellent idea, and I think it's a valid use of that property, you know, as long as you stay within the guidelines, you know, storing animals there and putting them there and neglecting them. It's got to be a part of it.
Main crew doesn't have to come in with the scoop shovel, right?
I talked to Sarah about this when I looked into this, and as long as we keep it within the animal requirements, which was one or two,
One animal per, yeah.
For 10 dollars, yeah. So.
One animal.
Can I speak for Castlevale City?
Sure.
This is the first time it's been brought to my attention. That doesn't happen, that doesn't mean much. Lots of things aren't brought to my attention. But, first time I've heard of it. I've talked with Terry, he's our zoning administrator. It is zoned and has such a space that it could legally store at least 3 animals. We're sure that it could store at least 3 animals there. Here's my concern. We have our rodeo grounds, which at times they have to store animals for a period of time, sometimes just very short period of time, sometimes for a long period of time. And the neighbors are already pretty upset about that, and they built there knowing it was a rodeo ground. Now these people who built here thought they were building by a school ground. Okay? They didn't know they were going to have an animal stored next to them. I'm not opposed. I think that Kareem has some great ideas here, but I think somebody ought to go talk to the neighbors and explain what's about to happen so that they're aware of what's going to happen there.
Well, this is a concern that why I brought up the animal storage part. You know, if we're going to bring the animals in for a day and working with them and then they're removed, but they didn't want to get in a situation where we were corralling animals and keeping them there on site and you know, for long periods of time or...
Well, and don't get me wrong, in the least, I think it's such a good opportunity for kids. I think it's a good thing. I just think communication is always better than non-communication in a student like this. And so it might be really good if Kareen or for some of her students, that would be a great opportunity for them to go around and explain what the plan is to those neighbors so that they're on board too, so they're aware of it too, and explain that it's not going to be stored, they're not going to be stored overnight, they're not going to be there for long periods of time. So all of that explained to them. So that the thing we may find out is that you've got great support there among some of those people whose backyards are there, and next thing you know, they're donating $100 to you. Could happen.
You're an optimist.
I am.
You know, I think it's a really good idea, but I agree the communication would be fantastic, but I would only feel comfortable voting for the proposal with the stipulation that there not be any animals housed there longer than just for day use, not even overnight.
That would be fine with me. Usually when I go in quarantine, I've done it, well, where the child protective center is, I don't know the best. We've done it better. And literally what I did is, I give my husband a day off. That's not really something he gets very often. He hauled the horse in for us, unloaded it. I have the students, not why I'm trying to keep it here. The school ground around the county. The school ground out in Foster and the Huntington, but I don't want to have to bust every time I want to do a lap. Because that really gets in the calm situation. But we literally unloaded the horse. And I had student holders that I have personally been around to hold the horses. Well, we did the hands-on lap. And the same way I did it when you're out here in the parking lot. And they literally had a chance to be able to see the animals, be able to pick up their food or whatever we were doing with them. And then when we were done, we loaded it back in the trailer and left. At that time, he was farming full time and horseman full time. He now has a full time 9-to-5 job and I can't ask him to do that. I would like to be able to bring it in and even do an after school activity or something or call a student down there and be able to help him here and then call it off and not have to start in front of him. There's many a day that I have been hurt, sick, run over. Because I'm working with really lousy equipment, I've been pinched between these panels trying to help tie them off to tag an animal. Where here at the central, we wanted to haul some animals in like a tag, and they stop somewhere. They're gone in 3 hours and we're done. But I need to have some place to be able to do that.
Did the area
fenced
in?
It is all clean, other than the section that comes along with the bottom of the fencing. Along the tennis courts and softball
courts. Is there an entrance to get into now, or would we need to...
No, there is already an entrance for trucks and
that.
Okay.
So you don't have to do anything as far as...
No.
Okay. Is there any other questions on it? I think that we need a motion to allow this, and probably with the stipulation that... that neighbors are contacting, and that there probably is no overnight. Okay, so
a
second.
I'll
in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Very much.
Make a motion on that.
I do.
Do you want the whole subdivision, or just
the
one that
borders that section?
Oh, no, I wouldn't think of it. No, it was just a few minutes of order. It's 3 or 4 houses, whatever it is there.
The right one.
Huh?
Give it the right one.
The ones in Bodo. The ones in
Bodo are. I'll tell you more.
The Republican or the Democrat?
Well, I think one going to be the one. Yeah, it's Martin. Oh, no, it's not Martin. He is Allen, and he's on the Republican Party, and the
Colt. Daryl Allen.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the Purple Party now. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to policy revision.
These are the policies that I presented to you last time to look at. I told you I'd bring them back. The first three, A, B, C, have to do with the new law that was passed that allows the school district, if you identify the reason for it, to be able to extend the provisional status of an employee for up to two additional consecutive years. The policies that I gave you listed three reasons. First of all, one, an employee whose contract may otherwise have been non-renewed and could potentially succeed if they were given additional time assistance. The second reason is if there's an verifiable health condition that significantly interfered with their ability to be successful. And when given that additional time, they could be successful. And the third was, upon recommendation of their immediate supervisor and concurrence of the superintendent, that it is to be extended for an additional year. Those were the three reasons. And those three policies, GCJ and GBA and GBI, all have to do with that. They have references to provisional educators and provisional employees, not just educators. The other policy was policy GBFD, which is background checks. In the past, the law did not allow the district to charge any kind of a fee for background checks for any employees other than teachers or educators, professional licenses. And that was because that fee went directly to the State Office of Education to offset the cost for BCI and those background checks. And recognizing that the code did not allow the other, they changed the law this year that does allow the school district to recoup the cost of background checks for all employees, well, for support staff, and particularly here because the educator's license is still renewed through the state. But for support staff to be able to recoup the cost that is charged by the Bureau of Criminal Identification. And so that policy is being revised, or I'm recommending it be revised, to indicate that criminal background checks, part of their initial employment at their own expense, and every 6 years in accordance with that law. Now, the background, the policy does not extend that to volunteers. If we have volunteers in our schools, and we have volunteer coaches and other volunteers who work with students unsupervised, they have to have background checks, but because they are volunteers and we are asking them to volunteer, then if the school chooses to use those, then the school would cover the cost of the background check, BCI would charge, which currently is about $25, I believe, that goes to BCI for those background checks. So you have those policies, and I'm recommending that the board approve those, direct those revisions.
Well, I would make a motion that we approve it as revisions as you've explained them to us.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have the land trust plan approval.
Yeah, I did receive copies of all of the school's land trusts. We all say trust land, but I have a hard time both ways. It doesn't matter how you say it, I guess. Any of you did not get too many time to send to you in advance, and I attached it to the information I gave it to you tonight. And if you have that and you want to look at page 2 or 5 of Canyonview's plan, item number 3 tells you what they're going to use that funding for. It's to continue to take care of their homework helper class. They are paying teachers or compensating teachers for teaching that homework helper class. They also are using tutor trackers. Right now, he indicates that they're working with 6 students who are struggling in core classes first, and then non-core classes second. These are to track those students who need additional help and assistance. The third one there is they want to add one classroom hearing enhancement system. This is your audio enhancement sound system in the classroom. They have had several hearing impaired students, and they want to keep that up to date. And the fourth one was to purchase audio textbooks for their library. Basically, Principal Jones is indicating, I'm assuming this is part of an accelerated reading program, but they have some students, because of their reading difficulties, are not able to participate or fully participate in that program, and having those audio books would then allow them to meet the requirements for the language arts classes in that ACR program.
It's
yes.
My dog is one of those that she's going to be white.
Yeah.
It would be very nice.
Yeah. So that's what Canyon View's plan is. So I brought that tonight. I am recommending, I gave you a summary.
Appreciated that, by the way. That was really helpful.
Of what each of the plans are, and I would recommend that the board approve the land trust plan for the 10 schools in the school district.
Kirk, I have one question on Canyon View, because I just briefly went over this. He also indicates that they're planning on using some of that funding to add a section of 8th grade language arts.
That was actually, that may have been part of the report. That's what they did this year.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure, I saw that, and I wasn't sure whether his plan is not to use that for the additional language arts. The district is picking up the cost of that.
Okay.
This next year. We're actually adding two language arts sections, one at Canyon View and one at San Rafael.
Okay, so they're not going to drop one.
Numbers,
okay,
that's indicated he would not be doing that this year.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, then a motion is in order to approve the land trust plan.
I'll make that motion.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, approval of memorandum of understanding, Race to the Top.
Yeah, we thought Race to the Top, we thought the race had already been run and was over. What happened was President Obama's recovery program included $6 billion to public education. And the first round of applications, all of the states, or most of the states, submitted applications. 16 states were identified and approved. I think Utah was number 19 in the final tally. And I was under the assumption that all 16 of those states would receive funding, but apparently that was just the first round of selection, and there were only two states that actually received the funding in the first round of Race to the Top. And as you recall, each school district in the state would have received $1 million to be used over 4 years and to meet all of those goals. And I can't even remember which states were approved. They were northeastern states. Massachusetts or somewhere like that. I can't remember. There's a second round of applications that are due first of June. And basically, the plan is identical. They're going to do a second round. There's less money. The state did apply for $250 million at that time. This time, the maximum amount is $175 million. The state of Utah is applying for $175 million. And of course, the memorandum, you just passed a memorandum of understanding to participate in that first round. Everything is exactly the same. Any reductions in the funding would be, the state would take the biggest hit. We would not be, if the Utah were selected, we would not get $1 million as a district, we would get $775,000. And it sounds like a lot of money, but spread over 3 years. If you were to hire people, it would hire maybe two or three people in your district. But the purpose of it is to, if you recall from the memorandum of understanding, was of course to improve student achievement and close the achievement gaps, but also to increase college enrollment. which I'm not sure how much control we have over, to use more technology in improving instructional systems. In other words, they would like to see technology used more in evaluating teachers so that data could be collected and compiled and reports generated that could be used as part of evaluation. They will change the name. Right now the terminology is highly qualified teacher, highly qualified teacher. The terminology would change to effective teacher and effective principal, or highly effective teacher and highly effective principal. And those determinations would be based on evaluation systems, and there would be a statewide evaluation system that would be developed, and that evaluation system would be based on, or the evaluation of teachers and principals would be 40% instructional quality, 40% on student growth, and 20% on surveys. Right now, our evaluation system does include surveys, but probably 90% is on instructional quality. But that's in the law. There's nothing in the race at the top that is not already in the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary School Act that will come within a year to a year and a half. So we're going to be doing it anyway. But we are to notify the state office by May 14th if our Emory School District plans to participate. And to participate, I simply need you to make a motion and pass that motion that allows them to use the current memorandum of understanding that we submitted on the first round to now move into the second round. And I think that we would not be, I don't know what the word is, I recommend that we submit a memorandum of understanding to participate in the second round of applications for the race to the top and not turn down the
$775,000. So moved.
All
in favor. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
That was a long explanation. I'm sorry.
Approval of online payment system impact payment.
We'll turn the time to Jared for that.
We started looking, maybe a year ago, at implementing an online payment system. This would be for parents to use to pay fees at the school for their kids, mostly for school lunch, but secondary school, this could also be used for school fees. We looked at probably three or four vendors, and the one that I want to recommend is the impact payment system. A couple of reasons. Emory County uses impact payment systems for their online payments right now, so for a citizen who uses both systems, it would be easier because they're used to it. Impact payment also will do accounting with each individual school. Some of the vendors require everything to go through the district, and then we would have to journal all of these expenditures or receipts out to schools. We can't do it. So impact payment is really nice because they'll set up an account with each school. They also have the lowest fee structure by far. There's no cost to the district or to the school. A parent would pay 49 cents for each online payment that they make. So they want to pay $200 into their kid's lunch account, it's a 49 cent fee to do that. Of course, they don't have to. They could still send a check or whatever options there currently are. This would allow them the opportunity to do it online. Another nice thing is that Impact is already working on with other districts that have signed on integrating into the SIS system so that the secretary at the end of the day can just have a list of payments that have been made that day. They'll click a button and it'll put the payments right into SIS to the student's account. So it will save the secretary's time to have this system in place. if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. One more thing, sorry, as far as the timeline, it's approved. We want to get this in place, if possible, by the start of next school year. And beforehand, enough so the secretary can send out information on it.
Well, I move we approve it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Principal Davis.
Okay. Sorry, we don't have time.
We told the limit of remarks to 4 or 5 minutes, and I think I'll hold to that tonight. Thanks for the opportunity to come and talk to you tonight about Indian High School, a place that I dearly love, and the people that I work with are amazing. We get a lot done because we work together, we think outside the box, talk, we discuss. Sometimes ideas are set aside, but I've really appreciated the listening here, the faculty, and the cooperation I've had over the last couple of years. And I think that we are moving in a positive direction. We are, I think, a dynamic school. We are looking at ways of keeping up with the students, with changes in student background, the challenges that we have, with what students bring to school every day, from their home lives to the challenges they have here at school. We acknowledge those things. We make plans to help those students. And I think most of the faculty, I know Dixie's heard this many times, but we never want to look back with regret, having said that we could have done more, or we could have done this, and we could have done that. And I feel like that has benefited a lot of students this year. When I gave my report in September, I had a lot of demographic information. One of the numbers that I gave you was 448. That's the number of students we started the school year with. Right now we have 414. For the most part, that number has dropped because of early graduation, and we're proud of that. Students have earned that opportunity. They've worked hard. And it's becoming more and more challenging because of the increased graduation requirements, which I fully support. But it is a challenge because students also want to take elective classes. They want to explore vocational classes. They too want to think outside the box. And they are. Last summer, we had students in this library under Neil's direction working on electronic high school to get credit so that they could free up time to do other things. So the curriculum is moving forward, academics moving forward, and the students, I think, are keeping pace. And they are graduating with a good education and the foundational skills that they need to move into careers, into college, and sometimes into the military. I'm proud to announce tonight, maybe you've heard this, but Mrs. Builder announced this in our senior class meeting last Wednesday, that Nevin Jensen is our valedictorian this year. We also have 2 salutatorians, Barley Huntsman and Missy Merrill, and 3 honor students, Colton Levitt, who, by the way, is also graduating with an associate's degree in CPU. That's not unprecedented, but it doesn't happen very often, and you have to be tremendously dedicated. But speaking of Colton, he's very active in a number of extracurricular activities. So that's very impressive. Brian Langston, also an honor speaker and leading guy. There were some tough calls there when you have some very definitive criteria for making these choices. But we had how many 4.0 students?
I think 8.0. An impressive number to me when looking at a senior meeting and acknowledge 35 seniors
who had a 3.3 for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
she passed
out
candy bar. So that's very impressive, and we're proud of that. There is quite a bit going on this month. I was thinking this might be the busiest month, but I think they're all like this. But that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. One of our goals coming into the school year, and this was advanced by the student council, Neil and I talked about it at great length before the school year started, was getting students involved. And we have provided numerous opportunities. We're expanding in those areas. We've added math club. The swim team was a huge success this year. And students are getting involved. Students are participating in these programs. We had over 70 students out for track this year. That program, at one point, had dropped off significantly from numbers of previous years. But I think students are getting the message. They're getting up out of their chairs. They're moving around. They're looking at what's available beyond what's in the classroom. It's almost a smorgasbord of opportunities, and they are looking at those things, and many of them taking advantage of them. We're also proud of that. We have this tomorrow with our region track meet over at Manti. And by the way, I'd just like to say that our new region, Region 12, is a very nice fit for the Emory School District, for Emory High School. It's rural in nature. The student body numbers from each school are comparable. It's been very competitive in every sport. It's a nice demographic, and we look forward to competing with these schools as we close out the end of the school year. As I mentioned, track tomorrow. We have baseball and softball closing out. The regular season, the region season, ended this week. Our baseball team finished tied for first with Richfield. We had a coin toss tonight. Richfield won the toss. So Emory's baseball team will play in a carbon playoff on Saturday.
Somebody bumped Larry's arm to see if he had flipped the coin.
I flipped it. Coach Gordon called it, though. And softball finished fourth in our region. They also have qualified for the state playoff. They're going to Bear River on Saturday for a four-team playoff. Two teams will come out of those playoffs and go into the state tournament, which is a week from tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. State ball at Kearns High School, softball at Spanish Fork and Utah Valley University. We have a closing choir concert next week. It's on May 12th. And kudos to Mr. Carroll and Mr. Bird. I was fortunate enough to go over to the region competition at UF and listen to our band and our chorus perform, and it was just stunning. I don't know if you've been to the concerts. I think I've seen Sam at the band concert, but it's impressive.
Yes. What time is this going to be on May
12th? 7 o'clock.
7.
Yeah, it's always amazing to me because I deal with a lot of those kids on different levels day to day, but when they come together and sing or perform, you know, there's a lot of beautiful instruction going on and meaningful learning part of the kids. We have core testing going on. Mr. Meekum is our test director, who orchestrated this whole thing, and it has gone very well this year. We are doing all of our testing on computer, which we started last year, worked out a few bugs this year. I don't think we've had any glitches. We finished up science today, and next week we'll have our math core testing done with that. Just a few makeup tests.
appreciate the work Doug has put in, but also we've had some of our faculty trained on this, Peggy Johnson, Janae Butler, and Josh White. Have all helped with this over the 3 week period. At the end of the school year, the last week of school, we scheduled semester testing on Tuesday and Wednesday, which is really a good thing because we're holding students accountable and we're holding teachers accountable for instruction right up until the end. Mm-hmm. And those semester tests have significant meaning on their fourth-term grade. And that is well outlined and will be well advertised to the students and also to the parents. We are launching our Nuestra Casa program, which is Spanish for Our House. This is similar to the Top Cap program that we started at Canyon View, and also I think at Santa Fe they have Top Dog students rewarded for grades. For ages and citizenship, for perfect attendance, no absences, no tardies, and also school service. We'll bring those students together on the 20th of May for a party, some drawing for prizes, and just thank them. Say thanks. We appreciate you coming to school every day on time, prepared, working hard. Sometimes we overlook those students. But we do appreciate it, and we want to say thanks to them in that program. We also have coming up on the 21st, and I do have an agenda that maybe I'll pass you out now, but we have ninth grade orientation. The schedule for that on the last page is this faculty newsletter. We do an evening orientation with ninth graders that is geared primarily towards registration. And we spend an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours with students and their parents. But we wanted to expand that this year and give our incoming sophomores, which is ninth graders, a more detailed opportunity of experiencing Emory High School. We're going to bus those students over here. We're going to meet in the auditorium. Judge Johansson will be our keynote speaker in the morning. We appreciate his willingness to come and talk to those ninth graders. We have a tour plan. We're going to do some group discussions, primarily centered around the question, what are your greatest concerns about coming to Emory High School, and what are you looking forward to? And discuss it, talk about it with group leaders and student ambassadors. We have some slideshows that we're going to show them that will give them a real good feel for what life is like at Emory High School, especially on the activity side. And we want them to leave here knowing a lot more about Emory High School, but more importantly, feeling good about it. And so, and I would invite board members, district office personnel to come and maybe take part in that, see what's going on. We have last year's student body president, Caitlin Potter, who is finishing up. I think she has finished up her first year at Snow College. She's going to be a keynote speaker in the afternoon. And she's very dynamic. She will not only have some good things to tell these students, some important things to tell them, but she'll do it in a way that they'll listen. And it will be meaningful. So, once again, you're all invited to come to that on the 21st, and that schedule that clearly outlines the program. We have on May 26th our awards program. This is when we give out a lot of scholarships, departmental awards, presidential awards. Very important night, and we're
we're moving in the direction of dignifying the program, getting the students there that need to be there, inviting the parents, thanking those people who provide scholarships to our students, and letting them know how important it is for the seniors graduating to have some financial help. It's not easy financially to go to college, and they need a lot of help, and we do appreciate the help that is given to them. That will be followed by a senior talent program, and then we will present and hand out yearbooks after that.
That begins at 7?
That begins at 6.
6.
6 o'clock for the awards program. Then the talent show will follow that at approximately 7 o'clock. The commencement program is May 27th. And maybe superintendent's going to ask you this, but we need to know.
Go ahead, it's on my list. You might as well do it now.
We need to know for program purposes who plans on attending. Last year, Nan Ann Loyal handed out diplomas, and I think Flora accepted the graduates. It worked out very well.
Sam would like to be involved in that this year with the grandson.
Yeah, the grandson.
We're trying to rotate. I think I'm.
I went to Green River last year. Who went?
I went to Green River.
You went to Green River too.
Would you be available, Marie? Or I could. Either way.
I will be in Green River this year twice in a row because I have two graduates next year at Emory High. So Gwen will be here and I'm going to be in Green River this year. So I'll be here next year.
I will be in Green River as well. If somebody likes to, either one. Do you like to accept the? Sure, okay.
Okay.
Help both of you can give out diplomas. I want to
really
do that.
Yeah, I love to. Yeah. Okay, appreciate that. And,
you don't have someone this year, like, really interested. Would you like to do the acceptance, too? Up to you. Yeah. I'm certainly not.
Almost another year.
Take a year.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Just a couple of notes about the handout. This is published yesterday. It's our packaging letter. And it's a fun picture of Cashwin trying to squeeze into his FSA tax 30 years ago. This comes out every other week. When we don't have the faculty meeting, then we have a newsletter, a calendar, and some other information. This one's a little bit different. The bulk of it is the first part of State of the School that I've written. It's been a reflection over the last couple of years. This part of it deals with culture. And as you know, the care coaches in the school district are required to write a state of the school address at the end of the year as part of that level. And I felt like it would be important for me to offer my state of the school as well. So it's out there. I have comments from the faculty members, and that's good. I know that they're reading it. I also post that on our website, on a lot of other things, so if you want to read
so this too, is on your website.
That one is not. All of the others are. I wait maybe 4 or 5 days before I post
that
on there to get the faculty exam to go through it before we put it out there in the presentation. But once again, I appreciate everything the board does. Tough times, tough economic times, but it's hardly noticeable, really, in our school district, in our school, because we come together in difficult times, and we work harder, and we make the most of what we've got,
I don't hear people complaining and whining about anything. It's more a matter of, you know, let's suck it up and continue to move forward. And it's not just moving forward, it's not just existing. I think, as I said earlier, it's being proactive and developing new plans, new programs, not being stagnant, but rather being very progressive. So thanks for all you guys do.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. I think there's that feeling, and you can feel that in the school, that you care about the student, and you're willing to go the extra mile with what resources you have, and we appreciate that as a board. There's some tough decisions. We appreciate Mr. Meekham and him taking on extra responsibilities. We know it's not easy. A lot of these things are not easy to do, but thank you for, and pass that on to your staff. We appreciate that very much.
I would like to thank Larry and Doug, too. I've been to a lot of activities, and I'm very impressed at the way they take care of things, the cordiality that they have, and for the way things are taken care of. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And it's wonderful that you keep the website updated. It's really fun to be able to get on there and see what's going on. I really appreciate that.
It took me a while to figure it out
last summer.
But it's really good.
Yeah,
I
enjoy
doing that too.
Yeah. I don't know how many of the board members were aware of the car accident we had last night. Maybe you'd want to fill the board in quickly on that.
Well, we had two of our students, one from Canyon View, come home from the softball game. Gabrielle Diamond, senior here, driving, I think it's like a suburban, and they were going east on State Road 29 from the high school, and a dog ran out in front. Gabrielle was driving, dog ran out in front of her. Even though they're caught in driver's ed, Stephen told me this today, this is all the had hit the thing. She swerved and went off the right side of the road, and you know on that road there's not much shoulder there. So it went down and rolled. Gabrielle was the only one wearing a seatbelt. Keelan Miller from Cleveland was thrown out of the vehicle, and the Huntington girl, Jayden Huntington from Canyon View, ninth grader, was also thrown out. But fortunately, they were not seriously injured. They were hospitalized. I think Jayden got the worst of it. Some bone fractures in his face. Gabrielle was back in school today. Keelan, I think, is going to be back tomorrow and the next day. They were very fortunate. Wear those seatbelts.
Might be an example to a lot of students, I hope.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's go ahead and have the superintendent's report, please.
Just two things that we haven't talked about. One of our teachers was selected as one of five recipients of the Arts Co Teacher Recognition Award program that Arts Co Company does. It covers five counties. And they let five teachers, they don't do it one in each school district. They just, you're nominated and you fill out application forms and they pick five, and it's been going for about 4 or 5 years now. We've had two recipients, this is our second one. We had one last year, but Vicki Rasmussen, Cleveland Elementary, was selected as a recipient of that award. I did attach to your paper tonight a picture with her and Nicholson, who's UEA executive director, and also one of the vice presidents, Mark Cole. There was a recognition banquet held over at Manti Elementary School on April 29th. Jed and I were able to go over to that, and so we want to congratulate Vicki on that recognition with the Arch Cole Company. So that was one thing. The other thing is that tomorrow and Friday, all of our principals we hope we don't have any real disasters in our schools. And all of our principals and one teacher from each school, and some of our counselors will be in Green River at Green River High School for what's called a REACH training. It's a training on cultural diversity, ethnicity, racism. We'll have Green River High staff, we'll have all of our principals and one teacher from every school here, and some of our counselors involved in that training tomorrow and Friday. So that's where we'll be. John is the guy in charge up here while we're down there.
We're talking emergency.
So
calling a lot.
That's presented by the State Office of Education, and they will be there for 2 days for training. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Jared, business administrator's report.
One thing, the student built house is close to being finished. So we may have an open house for the next board meeting, but we haven't set that yet. So I'll email you if we do, but it's looking really nice.
Okay.
And it's the one, if you've driven by, it's right next to the house. It's built right on the corner, just across from the swimming pool.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. All right, thank you. Are there any public comments? We appreciate your sticking it out to the very end.
I almost went
to work. Really? Good.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you. Thank Okay, we have some personnel issues for closed meeting. We need a motion.
I move the adjournment. I move that.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Larry, how many proctors do you have here at the school? For proctors for electronic high school?
How many proctors?
Proctors. For electronic high school?
I make a motion that we go out of the...
Well, Lloyd, I hope you're still out there.
Good luck. I'm not glad you're not going in alone. Yeah, Matt.
I hope you're going tomorrow.